Tuesday. I look, got you, look at you, eh?
Taco Tuesday.
Can you hear it?
How you gonna chew with one Tuesday? Taco Tuesday. Your hyena has no ass, Pikachu, eh?
I didn't get that one announced.
Fool, I'll be right back. Don't touch my food, eh? Homies, pick me up.
Pikachu, buddy.
Everybody's pitching in now. I just need some tacos, bro. Please serve them.
Back to back now.
My girl's laying in her
thong.
But mine is sour creamy. Yeah. Ain't got what? No motherfucking time. We're Taco Tuesday tweaking. Tweak. Mundo bring the juice.
Time I hear it.
To get bitch. Fill the room.
Everybody rapping now, huh? Everybody thinks of Weird Al Yankovic now.
It's funny how fools just be all like picking up on shit that other fools get big at.
Oh, he did it. I'll do it too. Oh, he did a Papa Willy. I'm gonna do two Papa Willys.
Fuck, yeah. That fool won Grammy of the Year.
Who did?
Best comedy album, Weird Al.
Weird Al Yankovic, yeah, this year?
He won it, dog. As I think, what's his name? There was a couple tweets about, like, you know, the Grammys don't listen to real comedy albums.
Did Willie Barcena try to take away the microphone?
Try to pull his hair, bro. Yeah, Weird Al won, dog.
Weird Al, yeah.
He won the Grammy.
I gotta make up my way.
I feel like I can just turn on whenever I want now.
Dead spot killer.
The studio's moving up in the world, man. They got connections and shit. Shit, man. What's up, fool?
What up? What's up? This fool.
I need some new pants. The taco's coming out.
It's like I got a little cat right there, fool.
Yeah. I know, man. So what's up, fool?
Chilling, dog, right here. Waiting for the guest, dog.
Oh, waiting for the for the guest, man.
Warming up seats, dog. Chilling.
That's how this show is, man. You know, sometimes, man, we have guests, and sometimes they just bail on us. They check on SoundCloud, and remember, these guys only have 466 followers. But that's how I would do it, man. Like, when somebody invites me to their podcast, hey, man, can you do my podcast? And I go look at their podcast. Well, they have 60 listeners.
Well, dude, not to be a dick. Someone was like, ugh. But we did some, remember, fool, like, in the beginning. But we did some podcasts. Remember that one in the house in the living room in Arizona and shit, dog?
Yeah, that was, we were doing radio.
Wasn't that was it? A radio?
It was a radio station, but it was in somebody's backyard.
It was like a dungeon or something.
Yeah,
and then it was all built up.
And we had bows there. Didn't they have bows? Cool. Of course they had bows.
Hell yeah.
And that other comedian didn't want to do it. That Tom Brady, what's his name?
Tom Brady.
Oh, the quarterback.
He does comedy now, dog.
He does comedy now, man. He's stealing jokes.
NFL, man. Turn comedy. But no, I don't know what comedy.
That guy that does, he does improvisation. Black comedian, Brady something.
Oh, Wayne Brady.
Wayne Brady, remember?
Fool, they probably said that fool's gonna catch a disease in that motherfucker.
Catch Ebola.
We're soldiers.
He didn't want to do it, man. This is more like patas.
Yeah, it was a pit bull in there and shit.
It's more like my house, eh?
For worse.
Worse, huh?
This was
my old house, eh? When I used to sleep on the dirty clothes. You can smell the socks.
Even, dude, even that shit isn't even as dirt. Dude, remember the first time I took you to Franker's apartment? This one came out. Oh, God damn, dog.
God damn, bro. That was probably the dirtiest house I've ever been to. It was bad, dude. Like, they have mold on top of the bathtub. It was black, dude. It was greasy. Like, I said, like, damn, man. Nah, man. It can't be that worse than the crack house I was in.
Yeah, that takes it to the low of the low, dog.
But at least it was a crack house. The other one, the party house, huh?
Yeah, dude, it was nasty. Like, some of the fucking wall was knocked out. You can see the studs.
How many fools lived there?
Five, fool.
Five dudes? They're all in bands or what? Or they're all in speed?
That too, fool, taking apart mini bikes. Most of them were in bands except for two fools that just one worked at the grocery store and then another fool just hung out with them and shit.
Check out my, I saw this video on Beer Around Bobby. It's George Lopez, an old video of George Lopez, and he's on that show with, what's his name? Mr. Duran, you know, Robert Duran, that show on East LA.
No,
the Robert Duran show.
That's like a back in the day oldie
show. Yeah, it's
show,
still
huh?
on. It's still on the show. It's still on. So this is George Lopez on it, right? And Duran is telling, and George Lopez talking about, yeah, man, it was hard before nobody shows up, and they never came to my shows. And then Robert Duran goes, I was sitting there, but you should have invited me antes, eh?
Oh!
So I looked it up.
Trip is that, you know, I was out there for a long time. I was out there for 20 years, and nobody ever showed any interest. And when Sandra came, and we
I was in the audience,
yo, bro. What? I live in the audience, bro. You're going to put me on your show, I'm just...
Oh! Damn, dog, like that?
What's up, Neil Brennan, fool?
He's here, dog.
I'm here, dog.
Fucking traffic, man.
What up, fool?
What's happening right here? Chilling with the great Neil Brennan, dog.
Yeah. Neil Brennan, man.
What's up, man?
What's up, brother?
Good to see you.
Chilling.
What's up, fool?
What up?
Chilling, man. Thanks for being here, man.
You guys just started?
Yeah, we started like 7 minutes ago.
Oh, great. All right, cool.
We're just warming up.
I thought it was
going
to be way
going over the just going over the video I saw with George Lopez, a young George Lopez.
What did he do?
Oh, he was on a show called the Duran Show. It's a show of local acts in East LA, in all that area. And George Lopez was just talking about, like, yeah, back then, you know, one person supported me and the show was kind of empty. And that guy that was interviewing said, I was there. He was. You should have had me in your show back then, man.
Yeah.
Why now?
How you doing, man?
Good, man. Sorry, good. Man. Sold out all shows at the Flappers in Burbank this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, man. People asking for free tickets left and right, family members, old friends. Do you get that? Your friends just forgot about you, or your friends don't want to kick
it? My friends don't really, like, they don't really live anywhere. They don't live in L.A., so it's, like, easier to... The thing that I get is, like, when can we come see you? I'm like, I don't... I do shows every night, so whenever you want. Like, they think there's going to be, like, a special show. It's like, no, it's a fucking...
Friends and family show.
It's kind of the same show every night, more or less. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's at the factory or the store or whatever. It's never, like, a big, you know, theater.
So what's up, fool, man?
Nothing, man. I'm trying to think of what to tell you.
This is Neil Brennan, people, from the Champs podcast with Moshe Kasher. Listen to this podcast. I did 2 episodes. I don't know which one they were, but they're out there. You should check them out. I have some crazy stories. Which one, from all your shows you've had on the... When did you start Champs?
We started 3.5 years ago.
Whoa.
Which now... Even back then, it felt like we were getting into podcasts late, but now it's like, oh, that was a while ago. Like, we were on the right. But it's taken us a while to get popular, like, because we only have non-white people.
That's what's up, fool.
That's your whole hook, right?
That's what you're here. You're here for Black History Month.
Yeah. but white people think it's racist somehow that we only...
Really?
People think it's weirdly racist that we only... interview black people, which I don't know how it's racist. I'd say it's positive racism. I'd say it's like, it's just about it because no one has, there's nobody that's not white has a podcast.
Nobody.
There's like you, and then there's like, now there's black people are getting more into it, but it's not like, are there any brown podcasts?
No, there's some, but we were just talking about some because we did one, but it was like a small podcast in El Sereno, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was in Highland Park,
Highland Park
in the ghetto
area.
Down right there.
And we were like, we drove down, down like, I felt like I wasn't in Los Angeles no more. We just started driving down these hills, and there was more houses. It felt like we were like in Brazil, and then we started. The guy started with a podcast talking about some guy got shot outside. I said, how did they find that motherfucker?
Yeah, that's a shitty neighborhood. If you think it's a shitty neighborhood,
it was a shitty neighborhood, man.
This was from LA, so hell yeah,
it was a bad neighborhood, man.
How has the do you get a lot of Latino listeners for this?
We have a lot of Latino listeners, a lot of Latino listeners from all over the world.
Yeah, it's weird. Whoever you can see where they're getting downloads, and you're like,
yeah, Korea. Like for a while, we had like our biggest listeners were in Ashford or Ashton, Virginia.
Yeah. And do you know why?
I have no idea. And I was trying to find a military base.
A VFW, though.
Or one of those, I don't know, just, like, we have a listener in Japan.
Yeah.
And he translates the show from English to Japanese. because he teaches Japanese in Japan. He teaches English in Japan.
And you're the English that class is in big trouble.
They're big trouble, man. Right now,
if you're the fucking
right now
standard
wearing,
bearer for
right now
English.
They're wearing Pendletons. They're into hip hop. They love low riders.
A lot of Japanese people going like, "What's up, fool?
What's up, fool?"
That is your. Is that yours? What's up, fool?
Mm-hmm.
We own the copyright.
Is that copyright true? That motherfucker.
All right, because somebody was saying. I feel like I said it somewhere, and somebody said I stole it, but it wasn't.
Nah,
you
can say it.
No,
yeah, I didn't, but I said it. I don't know how I said it, but it wasn't like they were like, "Oh, he got that from." I don't think Felipe stole that shit.
Yeah, it's like a thing from the street. But you, like Felipe said, like the first time I met you, like Edwin San Juan introduced me to you. You know, what's up, fool?
Yeah,
and that was it. And you took off, dog.
And also, it was my sister will answer the phone like that. Growing up, what's up, fool? Or who? What's up, fool? Who is this fool? Or I called some girl up one time and I said, "Hello, is Cynthia there?" "Oh man, some fool here wants to talk to you." That's all right. What's up, fool?
All right. I'll take it.
Now, we were just talking about that right now because there was like this feud on my Instagram because I put a picture of Marshawn Lynch with a Raiders jersey.
Yeah.
Because he might go to the Raiders, you know, hope. But these guys started fighting. And I started noticing when Mexicans get mad, they start speaking like black people. Like, they were throwing an N-word at each other.
The real ghetto comes out.
The real ghetto comes out. What's up, motherfucker?
The NWA old school ghetto comes out.
I feel like black people were hard before Latinos, though. You know what I mean? Like, in American history.
No, we were hard too, man. We brought knives to the game.
Yeah, well, the one distinction you can say with that is that, you know, they were slaves before.
That's what I'm saying.
And that's and then from coming from the South to L.A.
It's tough.
You know, and then, like, with the whole racism shit on top of it, so you kind of have to be a fucking hard human being.
But race... All right, talk to me about racism as a Latino, because I feel like it's like... I feel racism toward black people is fear and, like, hatred. Whereas I feel like racism toward Latinos is just being condescending. Am I wrong about that? Do you feel feared?
And we're taking over, man.
Or in essence, what, like sleeping giants?
We're sleeping giants, man.
But as far as the condescending thing, do you think it's like between Hispanic or Latinos?
No, I think it's white people are like toward black people. They are like fearful. And therefore, hateful. With Latino people, I don't think white people are afraid of you. I think they're just like, "Are you going to help me? Are you going to clean or lawn or something?"
I think it's like that. Great because point. I remember doing a show. Some guy, we did a show, and the lady at the place, like this white lady, you know, she was trying to be nice. But she don't know. She's white. It's not her fault, you know?
Yeah.
She don't see too many Latinos or Mexicans that are not there to help her do anything at her house. She's not used to seeing Mexicans other than what she sees on TV. So she told us, she started a conversation with me. And I said, "You know, we eat tacos on Wednesday." And I said, "That's good." You know,
just
but
straight up, that was her intro?
Yeah, the other comedians were pissed off. You know, they were like, "Fucking racist white bitch." But me, I was thinking more like, you know, this is her attempt of starting a conversation with her first Mexican guy that she's not going to order to do something.
Yeah, they don't deal with Latino people.
She doesn't know. It's
outside of like, "Are you going to?" It's that thing of like, "Oh, hello, hola. Are you, donde está my keys?" You know, like,
for
it's
reals.
All service. It's like,
like Chris break Rock, into my car.
Yeah, Chris Rock said it's like,
that
I think
variety,
he said that like,
that,
yeah,
that
like
article?
Latinos are basically slaves in LA. And that thing about like, where when he lived in like this place, Beverly Park, which is like a gated community in Beverly Hills, it's the most superfluous shit you ever heard. It's like, whatever. So, but he said there would just be like Latino women lined up to go and service these houses. Like lined up like a fucking, like in fucking Juarez or something.
That's how it is, man.
Yeah.
Do you think, when do you think Latinos, all right, when do you think Latinos will overtake white people?
Never.
That's a crazy ass question, dude.
Yeah.
Because white people be, see, as soon as the white Mexicans start taking over neighborhoods, white people start changing the city lines around.
Yeah.
So they could win votes.
Absolutely.
So redistricting and all that shit.
They start restructuring states. Yeah. So one day, California might be smaller than you fucking think.
Yeah.
So just to win votes. Or happen like what happened with that person that was not living in Los Angeles, but he was still a senator.
Who, Alarcon?
Alarcon, yeah.
Who was he? He was Latino?
Yeah, he was Latino. He was just going, I guess he wasn't living in the district he said he was living in order to be a representative. And he got busted for it.
Okay, do you feel like Latinos have the same institutional racism against them the way black people do?
I think it's different, though, because when you say Latinos, you gotta be, it's different because, you know, Argentinian people don't consider themselves the same type of Latino like a Mexican guy.
Let's say Central American.
Okay, now we're talking.
Now we're becoming the Argentinian.
When you look at it, like white, Mexicans, for example, we don't look at each other like, oh, that person is white or this person is black. We see ourselves equal as white people. You guys don't know that, but we do. But we don't consider ourselves.
No, I know. I do know that. Because you're not.
Cause we have our own country. In Mexico, black people are the same as they are in America. You know, I'm telling you, man, like, the darker the Mexican, the more he's shitted on.
Interesting. Yeah, but I can tell dealing with Latino people, with Central Americans, Mexicans, whatever you want to call them, dealing with black people, dealing with Mexicans, there's not that inherent defensiveness that there is with black people, which is earned. Like, black people should be defensive when they're talking to a white person, whereas Latinos, I can tell you guys, there's not the compression of, like the sort of...
Yeah, and a lot of that could do with, you know, bring up old shit. This was Mexico first.
Yeah.
The settlers came in, you know, west, you know, this way. And, you know, but the thing is with Mexicans or even Latinos, opposed to, like, say, Irish or Italian, that they're always coming over the border every day.
Yeah.
So, you know, even that distinction where I've never really gotten it, but, you know, fools go, oh, that fool acts like you can't speak Spanish and shit. Excuse me, senor, could you help me? I've never really gotten that, but, like, you know, some Mexican people do. And I've seen some Mexican people blow up when someone tries to talk to them. Like, they don't speak English
in Texas.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's a complicated question answered, you know, many different ways.
Yeah, well, it's also, I'm sure there's a big difference between the Texas Mexicans.
Like, when I go to Texas, I see a dirty looking fool, like with a burned face, like somebody that could get drunk with my father, and I walk, you know, and I walk up to him, and I'm pretty much stereotyping him as a Mexican from East Los Angeles. And I go, hey, cabrón, ¿dónde está la tienda por acá? El salón cinco, por favor. And he goes, God damn it, I don't speak Spanish, motherfucker.
Yeah, they got crazy
like, God
on that.
Damn, fucking hillbilly speaking Mexican. And that person has never spoken Spanish in his life. Here I am, I call him a wetback.
And they identify themselves as being Texan first before like Latino or Mexican, usually. That's fucking trippy.
Yeah, that shit's interesting. I also love that white people are so shitty that we made you guys work. Then
we
you
wanted
got
to
sweaty
work,
backs, and then we called you wetbacks. It was all work we made you do. And they were like, these goddamn wetbacks, they're sweating from all this dumb work. These lazy wetbacks sweating from the work we're making them do.
Yeah, I never heard that one, though, but sweating from the backs. I thought it was crossing the river
We're called wetbacks because we used to swim the Rio Grande.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
I assumed it was a sweat
before
thing.
Before the water got shallow and we started walking through it. It was the Rio Grande, and we... Well, the Mexicans before my dad, they used to swim on their backs with a bunch of people, and they would fucking swim. Some of them would drown, and that's where they came, fucking wetbacks.
Got it. Okay.
Coming in, raping our women, showing up with marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, the Mexican dudes, fuck, let me rape one.
Well, you know that shit about... You know that shit about the weed was made illegal mostly because
reefer madness.
Yeah,
right?
That was a whole campaign against Mexican workers coming in and also some blacks or whatever.
And cocaine was black dock workers because shit was legal. Like the Pope used to do coke.
Really?
Yeah,
a lot of people used to do that. Yeah. That shit was in Coca-Cola, fool.
Yeah, till the like 1900s.
I wish I knew that shit when I was in rehab. How you gonna tell me to fuck you, stop doing coke, motherfucker, when the Pope did coke?
Yeah.
It's a whole guilt trip, dude.
I use my knowledge for evil. So you never did nothing, right? No drugs?
No, heroin. I'll do like a mushroom. Coffee. Yeah, I'll do a mushroom.
Well, we're ready for you, bro.
I'll do but I've only done cocaine like once.
Oh, fuck that, bro. Don't do that shit. It's bad.
It was fine. I did it after I did my hour for Comedy Central.
Shut up.
I did it the night after.
Who are you with? Artie?
I did it the night after because I just thought if I died, it would be funny. Like, I did an hour, and I'm like, yeah, and they did cocaine the next day and died.
Did you do a lot or just a little?
No, like a little. And I was kind of like,
how bad was that set, bro?
It was fine. Like the cocaine. Set was good. But I'm saying,
you must have been high from your set then.
No, it was the night after. So I wasn't I didn't like come off stage and 24. Give me a toot.
Give me some toots to toots. That's right, cocksucker. It was me and Neil Brennan.
So it was fine. Like I wasn't like I got to get more of this. I wasn't like it was just like this is okay. It wasn't. I didn't understand why it was so popular. Honestly.
Wow, you're crazy, bro.
I think the whole thing with like chicks and dancing and all that shit.
Is that why it's popular?
I always did. That's what I always did coke when shit was bad.
Hang out with the fools that do coke when shit's good, dog.
I know, man. Like, you did a half hour special on Comedy Central? Yeah, but just some heroin.
I feel like that's the time you should do it, is when it's like you pop bottles and do cocaine. You don't do it. I mean, you could do it when it's bad, but it's probably not going to get better.
I'm one of those drug addicts that wants to that makes things worse. You know, I like when the ships are down, I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that's most drug addicts.
When did you start your stand-up comedy career?
I did it a little bit during Chappelle's show, like in 02, 03, 04, but then. We were doing the show, so I couldn't do it very much. I started like really, really doing it in 2007.
Oh, so you didn't start with those guys? You started as a writer?
Yeah, I just started as a writer. Like I just felt like, I was like, what a low impulse to need attention from strangers. And then slowly, I was like, wait a minute, I need the attention from strangers too. So that's kind of what happened.
And back in the day, you used to work at a comedy club?
Yeah, I worked the door at a comedy club, the Boston Comedy Club in New York.
Is that where you hooked up with all the...
Yeah, it's where I met, like, Chappelle, and I met Dave. We were, like, 18. I was going to NYU for film school, and my brother was a comic, so I used to hang out at clubs in New York when I was in high school. So I knew, like, Ray Romano and Dave Attell and John Stewart and all those guys. And
what's your brother's name?
Kevin Brennan.
He still does it?
Yeah.
Cool, man.
Funny dude. He's not happy about me.
Why?
Because people are competitive, and because if you were doing comedy and then your brother starts doing comedy, or your brother's a writer and then starts doing your brother does really good as a writer and then starts doing stand up, you'd just be like, I'm gonna kill this motherfucker.
Troll him every day.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. When people are like, I can't believe you. I'm like, I totally get it. Plus, my fucking personality, I'm not apologizing for it. I'm like all fucking cocky and shit. Like, so I'm not going to be like, I'm sorry. That's like, you kind of can't do stand up from a place of apology.
Yeah, you
know?
Man.
So your brother, man, you and your brother go, I'm competitive, bro.
I fucking guess, dude. That fool, I mean, he never did comedy or nothing, but he wanted to fucking be a photographer and, like, shit.
A rodeo clown.
But, yeah, I could see that shit, growing up and then, some fool, like, takes to the next level or he's actually doing what he wants to do and fucking have a little bit of, man, fuck that motherfucker.
Yeah, and he, like, got me... Like, he introduced me to the whole scene, so it's like, I don't think I wouldn't have not done it if I'd met him, but I'm saying, like, if he wasn't my brother, but who knows, you know? Like, he made it possible.
Throw him a bone, dog.
I've thrown him bones. I've thrown him bones. We've done pilots and shit together.
Nice.
That's what's up then, dude.
Say again?
Oh, that's what's up then.
Yeah, I mean, cool. That should be what's up, but that's not what's up. Because you can never. The thing is, when you throw someone a bone, they end up resenting you. Because it's like, well, everyone thinks I got it because of you.
Well, that's true.
And it's like, and then I can't feel good about myself, and I, so it's not good there's no good way to do it.
Damn.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no good, like, solution other than just not to talk. I don't, but again, it's not like animosity. It's just like, I get it. I get why he doesn't want to talk. But I can't, I either have to side with him or side with myself. So guess who I'm going to side with?
You know? So you used to write for All That?
Yeah, I wrote for All That on, when, that was like one of my first jobs. My first job was writing for Singled Out with Jenny McCarthy. And I'll never forget when I told her about vaccinations.
What happened?
She took it and ran with it when I told her about vaccinations causing autism.
Damn, dog.
That was fucking 20-some years ago. And Chris Hardwick and Jenny, and I wrote for that for the pilot in the first season, and then I wrote for All That for one season. But I was really shitty at it. Like, I wasn't good. They would call my comedy experimental.
Not even alternative, huh?
Yeah, no, it was like, yeah, I guess it was alternative. But it just, I didn't know how to write for fucking kids. Like, I really had no idea what I was doing.
Who was on the show when you were on there?
Kenan Thompson, Kel, Lori Beth Denberg, like the people.
Amanda Bynes, huh?
Yeah, no, it was before Amanda Bynes. It was like the second season. But it was a good experience. But it was, they would like abuse me. They'd throw shit at me at the writer's room and they'd call me the boy and shit. And then me and Chappelle wrote Half Baked. Like, me and Dave had been friends the whole time. So
how long did it take to write that movie?
Not long, dog. We outlined it in like a night because basically we'd never talked about it. And so I'd written a script and had a meeting with this guy Bob Simons, who had produced Sandler's movies. He had produced Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison, and I'd written a script that wasn't very good, but he was like, I heard whatever, so I met with some of the work, and I went and had a meeting with Bob, and I was super funny, and then about a week later, Dave was in there, and he's like, yeah, I'm writing a movie, and they're like, with who? And he's like, you've never heard of him, and he's like, who? And he's like, I don't know, this guy Neil Brennan, and they're like, oh, fucking Neil was just in here, we love Neil. So they were like, you gotta pitch the movie, like, when you... Like, in soon, you come in and pitch it. So Chappelle called me, and he was like, hey, man, if Universal calls you, say we're writing a weed movie. And I was like, okay. Never talked about it. And then Universal called me, and they were like, so you and Dave are writing a weed movie? And I'm like, yeah, a weed movie. They're like, when can you pitch it? And I was like, I can pitch it in 30 days. And so we waited till the 29th day. And spent just basically a whole day in the Mondrian across from the comedy store, and just outlined the whole thing, and then we pitched it the next morning, like exhausted, but it was a fucking funny pitch. It was basically what the movie became. It was actually better than the movie, but and then we were like 23, and we wrote the script probably in like a month or a month and a half. And we could have written it in a week, by the way. If you write fast enough, if you don't procrastinate, you can actually write really fast. So we wrote it in like a month and a half. Then they were like, "All right, well, this is green lit. We turned the script in May, and they were like, "All right, well, the movie's coming out in January." We're like, "What?" They're like, "Yeah, you got to go to Toronto and location scout like now." So we were like, "Okay." And at that point, the most exciting thing was that when you travel, you get per diem. So we get like $100 a day cash. And there are many strip clubs in Toronto.
Over there, dude.
And so we were just in Toronto for like the whole summer. And it was like, it was great, man. I mean, it was like a fun, it was great on the one hand, but it was also, it was like a real trial by fire. And like, oh, I'm on set of a studio movie and I have to like, you know, make decisions. Like,
you were executive producer?
Well, I was on set as a writer. Like, I was on set saying, you say this, you say that. Guys, you got to be, like, kind of directing a little bit and, like, definitely rewriting on the fly. That's where that know-it-all shit, the part of me that my brother doesn't like, helps. Is because you kind of fucking got to be, like, I can't be on set
pussyfooting.
Pussyfoot, like, yeah, you have to be like, no, this doesn't, like, you have to have a sensibility. You have to go like, I don't like that joke. Why don't you like it? Because it's hacky, whatever. Like, you have to, okay, for instance, so my brother was in Half Baked and got cut out.
Damn.
Again, I didn't cut him out. Like, what? I've gotten cut out of movies. You get cut out of movies. People get
studio
cut out all the time.
I've been sliced.
Yeah, like, what is it? Cut out photos.
He's been sliced.
Oh, yeah. People crop photos. Exactly. So it's like, he was mad at me. And it's like, dude, I fucking still got you in the movie. Like, it wasn't like I
got paid.
I didn't get you in to, I didn't put you in the movie to cut you out. But that's the kind of thing, like, where people get mad and you're kind of like, all right, dude, what do you want me to do? Like, I didn't not have you in the movie. Like, so. Whatever, that's not an actual problem. And then the movie came out, it opened against Titanic.
Damn.
Yeah, it opened against Titanic, Good Will Hunting.
Fuck.
Fucking GoldenEye and some other popular movie. So yeah, we got trounced. And then it was, then on video and DVD it started to get popular.
And now it's a cult classic.
Now it's a cult classic. But you know what cult classic means? Not popular in theaters. and you know what that means? We don't want you to write anymore. We don't want you to write more movies for us, because they don't think about movies as, can you get us our money back in 2 weeks? Damn. Not, hey, can you get us our money back in 4 years? Although Half-Baked got the money back like within a year, I'm sure. And it's got to be one of their more profitable movies, I'm thinking.
They want that money now, huh?
Yeah, they wanted the opening weekend. They wanted it within 3 days.
Wow.
I mean,
damn, dude.
They give you a, yeah, it's like, that's the business they're in. Like, and now it's more, you know, there used to be a big DVD market, and now that shit's dried up, because it's like, I ain't fucking buying shit. Someone gives me a DVD, I'm like, get away from it. It's like getting summons.
Netflix and all that shit.
Yeah, it's like getting served with papers. I'm like, get the fuck away from it. So now there is no DVD market, so that's why movies are stupid now. Because they're literally made for Chinese people. They're literally made for people that can't speak English. That's why, like, those Fast and Furious movies, they're going to make those movies. Paul Walker ain't going to be the only one who dies. And they keep making those movies. Those movies are not going to stop because they're dumb. And the dialogue is like, we got to get out of here. And you can understand it if you don't speak English.
Get down.
Yeah, get down. That's why, yeah. I mean, so.
Just like the Expendables does well overseas.
Oh, it's huge. Because they're all famous. And you literally don't like them because they talk. You like them because they run around and jump and shoot.
My dad would have been excited, man. Oh, wait, what? You're going to get Charles Bronson, Chuck Norris, and Arnold Schwarzenegger in the same movie? I'm going.
I'm right there. Yeah, so that's what's happening now, whereas you don't really have a chance to be a cult classic that much anymore. if you're a cult classic, it's got to be, the budget had to be a small fucking budget. Like, it's got to, like, Half-Baked was like $7 million, but the budget for a cult classic now, the budget's got to be like $500,000 in order for it to even, because they don't really make small movies anymore, like that. Like, a studio movie isn't going to make.
Like, Grandma's Boy didn't do well when it came out, right? No.
No. And I don't think that was like on the cusp of video. So like that's still, I think still, Schwarzenegger kind of has a career from it in a weird way. Like that's what he's most known for.
I saw that movie on video too. I never saw
it. I've still never seen it. Is it funny?
It's funny.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
It's hilarious.
Oh, good. Well, good for them. Yeah, same guy. Sandler produced that, and he.
But you know, I laugh at stuff like stupid stuff. Eh?
Quick,
like, there's a scene where he's cooking, and he forgets to put on oven mitts because he's stoned, and he picks up the oven rack. How hot with his hands, dude! And the next day he has to go play games.
Yeah,
dumb.
And it's all swollen. What happened?
Swollen, man. So you co-created the Chappelle Show?
Yeah. Then
for all our fools out there, man, this is the guy, yeah. Motherfuckers.
So yeah, so then Half-Baked. So then we were put on sort of probation after that.
What happened after Half-Baked, man? Like,
I wrote.
Was it like Scarface? After, was that your Scarface?
What do you mean?
You know, like, this movie was supposed to be blown up. Like, we had, like, Scarface was huge, man, but it didn't do well at the movie theaters. But now it's a cult classic.
Are you sure Scarface didn't open? I didn't know that.
It didn't open. It bombed, bro.
That's interesting.
What's the name?
Brian De Palma?
Joey Coco Diaz had, what's his name on the podcast?
Check it out. Angel Salazar.
Oh, right? Yeah.
He had the other one, Manolo.
Oh, fucking Stephen Bauer.
Yeah, Stephen Bauer said that him and Al Pacino were tight during the shooting of the movie. Then the movie aired, and then it do nothing, man. Man, he changed his phone number.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, that's what happened. It's like having a fucking stillborn baby or something. It is, man. It's like you do not, like a lot of marriages don't survive the death of a kid. Like, you partnerships, it's like, it takes, you, there is a stink.
Buried.
What does that feel like, though? Do they feel worse than bombing? To have your that shit out there all over the world.
Yeah.
Because people look at you how the other comics are doing shit. Do you feel that? Because I know how they feel. How when I fail, you know, I can feel it. You know, like these motherfuckers are thinking out loud. Yeah, there he go, man. That motherfucker bombed yesterday.
Well, the thing of when you bomb, no one loses money.
Oh,
that's the thing. Is when a movie bombs. I remember I went to the premiere of fucking Bowfinger.
Damn.
Okay.
Damn.
Yeah. So this is after Half Baked to come out. Same producers. Universal did it. And the heads of Universal looked at me like I was fucking retarded. They looked at me like, please don't talk to us. And I was like, okay, this is, first of all, this is the last premiere I ever go to. And it was like, they think, and they just go like, everything in showbiz is so out of proportion. So they're like, when you write a good script, they're like, you're a genius. And then when it doesn't do well, they're like, you're fucking retarded. And you just have to go like, okay, I neither are true. So you just have to kind of like walk back, if that makes sense. It's like, they'll let you back in. They ain't going to pick you up, though.
Dead man walking, though.
Yeah, you just gotta walk. You just gotta walk your shit back. Like you, it's on you now. They're not gonna help you. They like they don't believe in you, and they resent you in a weird way. Like you tricked us. It's like exactly, I didn't dog. Trick you.
A con artist.
Yeah, yeah. They like don't take your word for it. And then
he
and then
sold us a lemon.
Yeah. So then I sold a couple movies. Like they didn't. I didn't sell them to Universal. I sold one to Paramount and one to. Fucking Miramax. And a couple scripts, wrote those. That was fun, just living in New York. Wrote with this guy named Mike Schur, who now he created Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's a good dude. And then me and Dave would talk every once in a while after the stink. And then he was like, he wanted to do like Playboy After Dark. Like, that was his shit. He's like, we should do, like, you ever see that show Playboy After Dark? It's like, yeah. This weird. It was like a weird, like, hangout show. Hugh Hefner would just hang out in, like, a lounge with a bunch of skanks. And skanks and furs. And so we basically just did Chappelle Show. We made a pilot for Comedy Central. In the pilot, there was no audience, though. Like, it was just Dave talking to camera. Like, I shot him, like, at a diner and shot him at a bunch of places. And then it got picked up. And became, you know, a big thing. But again, it was like, didn't, when people are like, did you know? I was like, no, you don't know shit. It's like, I asked Eddie Murphy one time, I was like, when you were on SNL, did you feel like I'm just dominating? And he was like, no. It's like, I was just in the trenches, man. You're just trying to survive. You never think like, this sketch will be the one that will put it. You just go like, I got an idea, blind white supremacists. All right, good, we got to write it. And then we gotta, what else are we doing in that show? Like, we gotta do this, we gotta do this. So you're just living idea to idea. And then, so super popular, and then there's big negotiation, and then we both got a bunch of money, and then Dave took off, and then I was like, oh, that's interesting.
He just took off like shit, like he didn't tell you?
Yeah,
no, he left you like abandoned?
Yeah, I was on the set.
Abandoned ship?
Yeah, yeah. Shit was traumatic, Felipe. And then after that I was like, I gotta do shit where I'm not relying on somebody. And since then I'll just write shit for myself. I'll do stand up, I'll write scripts, you know, movie scripts that I can direct, or I'll write, you know, pilots or whatever. But and I'll work with people that I'm friends with, like people that, you know, I'll work with Seth Meyers, or I'll work with Chris Rock, or people that like I just, like, want to work with, because after a certain point, it's like, I'm not going into some sitcom to just feed some dumb machine, because I know I can do it. There's not, I think I have enough money that I don't got to do shit, and assuming I don't need a nurse or anything, knock on wood. And so I think, yeah, so I just, like, just do shit I want to do. So I have a pretty easy life, is my point.
Just chilling, buying tennis shoes.
Kind of. Yeah. And now I don't even got to buy them, because I've been directing some shit for Nike, so they send me shit. I've been directing commercials and shit for Nike.
For with that
Blake Griffin. We have Blake Griffin and Chris Paul. We did like a sketch, like a little sketch show with those two. And what the best part is, I already got free shoes from Blake Griffin because we're friends, and because he's a big comedy fan. And then I was on the set shooting for, it was for Jordan, the commercials, and all the Jordan people were like, "Man, you got to get some Jordans." I was like, "I know."
Hell yeah.
And then so they sent me Jordans now too. I have no complaint, and I do voiceover for Samsung.
So how nervous were you, man, when you were writing and getting the pilot together for the Chappelle Show? Did you still have the stink from Half Baked?
Yeah,
but you could feel it around you, like,
yeah. We still had the stink, but now it was like we still had the stink, but it was getting that cult classic feel, like they'd run it a lot on Comedy Central.
Oh,
so but perfect. It was like, but at the same time, it was like. You never quite... It's hard to get that stink off. Like, you see what we had to do to get the stink off. Like, you have to do a great thing where people are like, oh, you guys are smart, or whatever. But I don't remember being nervous. I remember being, like, at the end of my rope. I remember just being like, I'd rather just write shit. I'd rather just not be in comedy than have to write shit I don't want to write.
How many more seasons you think you had left? Could you continue with the show that had been going on if Chappelle would have stayed? You think you had enough material?
Yeah, I think we had enough material. I mean, it was
fresh.
You know, yeah, it was about race and fucking culture, so it wasn't like there was, you know. Yeah, I think we could have gone on. I mean, we were contracted for two more seasons.
We didn't get a goodbye.
Hell no, it was like a samurai chop.
Oh, as an audience?
Yeah. Because I remember when you worked on that what was that thing you did for President Obama?
Oh, yeah, the Correspondence Dinner, yeah.
He even asked you, huh?
Yeah.
I was like, what? I remember when you were showing me all the photos of you and the President Obama and his wife, Michelle, and you got rode for that roast.
Yeah.
Killer jokes you got rode, by the way.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I watched the whole thing, and I'm like, good job, man.
Yeah, there was some great shit in there. And it was like Seth, John Mulaney.
And you said that you love hanging around with writers, right?
Yeah. It's the best. Well, yeah, like, I just ate lunch with Mulaney, and it's like fucking, it's just like your, I remember when I first got the job writing for Singled Out, it was the first time I was like, oh, like, it felt like, oh, these are my people, like, these are like, got, they all had seen the same weird movies, and all had the, kind of, not the same opinion about shit, but like,
very like-minded.
Yeah, like like-minded people of like, oh, they're smart, they're silly, they, like, it was cool, and it's still like that with comedian, like, I still would rather, where people, after I did Chappelle Show, and people were like, why are you at comedy clubs doing stand-up? It's like, because I like comedy. Like, period. Like, I'm not trying to get out of this shit. Like, I'm not trying to get, like, I just want a mansion. And if I have anything, I'll maybe have a club in my basement, and I'll invite people up, and they can do stand-up. Like, no, I like comedy. So I like, getting, I'm competitive in that, like, club rat way. Like, I just like if something on the news happens, it's like, oh, I want to write a good joke about this shit.
Hell yeah.
Like, in a competitive way, like on Twitter or whatever. Like, so I just like comedy writers. I like comedians.
So you basically, after the show, you have to start all over, huh?
You basically, yeah. Like,
as a comedian, and you have to build your own Neil Brennan fans away from, that's tough, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was
people
tough.
Yelling, "Hey, what happened to the show?"
Not really. I
Not
thought they
Dave.
Would. Yeah, I thought they would, and they kind of never did.
But happened to him, huh?
With him, they just yell out like, "With Dave, it's a different thing because he's like a legend. He's like Johnny Appleseed and shit." So he's on some like, "Here comes Paul Bunyan." He had his own show, and now he just walks the countryside with a bay box.
Damn.
So
walked
he
away
had,
like kung fu.
Yeah. So he just like has this like he's got this mystery to him. So I think with him they just and he's Dave's good with like leading people on and going like I might do the show and it's like Okay, man.
Psych.
Yeah. I don't know. What? You never know what could happen. It's like, okay.
Would you ever work with that fool again?
With Dave, no. Only because, like, there's no point. Like, there's no...
What else, huh?
Like, what do you want to do? Because if it gets too popular, you're going to leave. So... but I'm not mad at him or nothing. It's just more a matter of just
What do you think about those conspiracy theories about why he left?
It's just dumb.
It's stupid. Have you heard about it? Tell them what you heard, bro.
I heard some shit, dude.
Same thing that happened to Cheech. The same thing why Cheech left Cheech and Chong.
You know what happened to Dave, man.
The same thing happened to Dave. The same conspiracy. Tell him, bro.
The Muslims came at Dave and said, hey, man, stop this cooning, man.
Yeah. No, that's not true.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just pressure. I mean, the thing is, it's like, if you do racial jokes, people misinterpret them sometimes, but you can't, no one's going to interpret everything perfectly. So, that's the thing, when you make art in a public way, it's like, people can just think whatever they want. So, white people would see it and be like, yeah, I like that. Like, one time, the worst thing was, like, we were at some bar one time, and some fucking dusty-ass white trash dude came up to us and was like, I like that sketch where the guy leaves his wife because she's a nigger lover. And we're just like, ugh. It's like, is that what you took from that sketch? It's like, A, that's because he's fucking racist. It's not like we could have... It's not like he needs ammunition. He's going to be racist regardless. So we couldn't change his mind. So it's misinterpreting. People like that misinterpreting the work as like being bad for black people, or being like they take it to prop up their own racist point of view. And then if you're Dave or someone like that, you misinterpret that it's all your fault and you are the cause of racism. And you're bad, and you're it's like, just, it's dumb. It's like, it's just a, I know people in bands that, like, Rage Against the Machine are, like, basically a socialist band, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would play that shit in tanks in the Gulf War.
Hell yeah.
It's not their fault. It's like, that's not what their music's about, but that's just what happened. Like, that's just how they used it. They did the same thing with Beastie Boys. Like, they'd literally play Fight for Your Right to Party as they were blowing up Iraqis. And it's like, it's awful, and it's a misappropriation, but it's not the Beastie Boys' fault. And that's how I feel with that. I think that was part of Dave's work. And that's the thing that white people don't really have to worry about. It's like, I'm never going to be the spokesman for all white people. Whereas if you're black and you get popular, you're the spokesman for all
you
black people.
You have to be.
Yeah.
You
don't have to be. Okay,
they think you have to be.
They think you are. There have been people, I think Eddie rejected it, and I think Chris Rock more or less rejected it, or just ignored it. Like, no, I'm not the spokesman for all. And Chris had the same thing for Niggas for Black People, where people were like, see, I told you there's a different, there's good ones. And it's just like, is that what you think I was getting at? Or do you think that black people are, because what I meant was, black people are sick of getting treated like there's one type of black person, and they're all, you know, like, you're treating us as if we're the worst amongst us instead of the best amongst us. It's like, I always say, like, no one, we have a black president now, but no one takes that into racial stereotypes. They don't ever go, like, you know how these blacks are with, you know, being, you know, drawing consensus and getting, you know, working congressional backwaters to get laws passed or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you know how black people are with their, like, being good at, you know, passing social welfare reform and health care and shit like that. It's never, they never use positive people for, there's never positive stereotypes.
Hell no.
So I just, to me, it's easy to ignore, because I'm white, but I also think it's easy to ignore because it's a false premise that somehow now, having said that, it's still pressure. If you're Dave, or if you're Chris, or if you're Eddie Murphy, if you're, you know, Martin, or whoever you are, so if you're Bill Cosby or whatever, but again, yeah, it's like the, you know,
like everybody wants a handout. Like, I remember we were George Lopez got his show. Remember those people that were hating?
Fuck, dog.
Oh, my God. Man. He didn't help out the Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't help everybody out, man. This ship only fits 5 people.
Yeah, you can't help everybody out. You can help,
you try to help your brother out.
Like, yeah.
I mean, what else can you do?
Yeah,
you
it's like, I can get
that's show
you,
business.
Yeah, it's like, you fucking, my brother introduced me to comedy clubs, and I took the lead and fucking ran with it, and I did pilots with him, and fucking the piloting get picked up. What the fuck you want me to do?
People don't understand that show business is not like a social program. It doesn't work that way, man. You gotta...
Yeah, it's not like...
People don't give out development deals to everybody.
Yeah. And it's like, Dave gave me an opportunity, and I used it. Like, I'm good at it. I helped him. You know? It's like, I wasn't like, man, I got that weed, man. like, you know.
You're on creative ass.
Yeah, he picked a decent person. Like, he wouldn't have picked a bum. But that's the thing, is people assume, you know. But yeah, so I don't... So that's the thing with Dave. It's like, he's hilarious and great, but I don't... I get, you know, I do stand-up with him. He wanted me to do a show this weekend, but I couldn't do it. He wanted me to do those Radio City shows, too, but yeah. So that's sort of my feeling with him. But we're cool, but, like, anything filmed, he ain't getting filmed. Also, the thing with Dave is he's got more power not doing shit than he does doing shit. So I tried to explain that to someone the other day, and they're like, I'm like, dude, he's fucking... All he can do is lose. It's the same thing with Eddie Murphy. It's like... Do sketches. The fuck would he... Eddie's actually might do some sketches on Saturday Night Live, but, like, that's what I've heard, like, for the show on Sunday. But I don't know when you're going to air this. But all you can do is go down. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other thing with, like, leaving the show. It's like, he knows when to close. He knows when to get off stage. It's like, he knows, like, oh, wait, this is probably... I'm probably never going to be more popular than this, so let me leave a fresh corpse... Let me leave a sexy corpse instead of just, like, running some shit into the ground and just, like, you know.
And as far as when you started doing stand-up in 2007, did you have any expectations? Did people have expectations, or did you have pressure on you to be funny or anything? Or you just went with it as, like, a new venture?
I mean, people had expectations in that, like, my intro was a Create a Chappelle Show. So I think, like, it took me a while to get good. You know, took me a couple years. But I was never... My jokes were always pretty good. Like, I could always write pretty good jokes, but I just couldn't... You know, it takes a while to just get, like, chops and get, like... Just to be able to stand on stage and, like, command a room takes... It's not... I mean, I think there are probably people that can do it pretty quickly, but I'm not one of them. Like, it took me a while to, like... I had, like, a checklist of shit before I go on stage of, like, no, you have to think, and I did, like, positive visualization, and just, like, I went to voice class. Like, I did shit. I wasn't, like, fucking wing it. I just get fucking a little drunk and go up there and see what happens. Like,
a little
no.
bump.
Yeah, I do a little tootski. You know me. So I had to basically, like, figure out how to do it, you know, and that was hard because that's not something you can do in private. You know, that's not something you can give your friend to read. It's not like writing. It's like, no, you are on at the Comedy Store and you fucking eat shit for all the world to see. And you just gotta take it. It's like, just like fucking right in the medicine ball, right in the gut. You just like, you just gotta fucking, it's your medicine ball. But the good news is you get better.
One of the sketches that you guys wrote on Chappelle's Show, the one with Elon Gould.
Yeah.
Where he plays Barry Katz. Yes. Was he playing Barry Katz?
Yeah, he was playing Barry. Yeah.
On a wheelchair?
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
Are you with Barry or something?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Not anymore. But when somebody sent it to me, I said, no way.
Yeah.
Because I've done sketches on The Tonight Show with Elon Gould.
Yeah.
And he's done the voice. He does good voices.
Yeah.
So I was like, damn.
Yeah, he does a really good Barry.
How did you guys write that? You just came up with it?
We were just writing a thing about getting revenge on people. And Dave was like a big, like, grudge holder. So he was just like, let's go down the list of people that you have grudges against. And that was one of them. Yeah, that was a funny sketch, actually. Like, there was... like,
the fire and
shit. Did Barry Katz think it was him right away? Or somebody told
yeah.
him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was fucking obvious. It was Barry Katz. Like, how you doing, man? And he had a fucking... He had a fucking he had like a fucking dumbass ponytail and shit.
Dude, you know what hit the mark the most watching that sketch? Is if you know Barry Katz, is that when you were in a wheelchair and he confronted Dave, he goes, "Dave, I was talking to Rizzo over there. We were just talking about you."
Oh yeah, no, that's actually based on a real guy. He goes, "I was talking to Jay Rizzo the other day," and he goes, and Dave's like, "Oh man, how is Jay Rizzo?" And he goes, "He's in a wheelchair too, man." which was actually not based. There was a guy who used to hang out at the Boston Comedy Club named Jay Russo, and we just mentioned his name. But it was like that was a funny sketch because it was so personal. That's the great thing about having a sketch show and being petty.
Threw that foot in the fire.
Is that you? Yeah, yeah. We lit the club on fire, and then Dave punted a baby. That shit was. I love that sketch. That sketch is really fun.
How did you guys come around to get Charlie Murphy to tell those stories, or did he really tell them during lunch?
No, yeah, he had. We one time me and Dave actually during the Half Baked time. When Half Baked got green lit. We did a bunch of mushrooms. We got a limo and did a bunch of mushrooms. That's what's up. And we like went to some club and like me, Dave, some strippers. It was hilarious. And
take me, bro. Next
and
time.
No, I know because I never do shit like that. Like I never fucking like a side.
Bro,
note,
you do that all the time, man.
Yeah, right. Fuck me, dog. Yeah,
like this is I like Drake because of this. Drake hosted the ESPYs this year, and after they did like a, he had like a writers retreat at his house, and it's just a bunch of dorky writer guys. And Drake, when they were done with their like 2-day writing retreat, got a bunch of strippers and handed out packs of singles to all the writers. And was like, "Have fun, man," which I love, and that shit never happens if you're a writer. So we went to a club, and Charlie was there, and I remember Dave talking to him, and I was like, and I was on shrooms, and I was like, "Looks like Fat Eddie Murphy," and so I went over there, and he was just like, just telling Charlie stories, and there was a thing where he'd go like, "Nigga, there's poison in ice cream." I used to tell Eddie all the time, "There's poison in ice cream, motherfucker," like all this shit they be making out here. So for years, me and Dave just be like, "There's poison in ice cream," and it was just like his way of like saying that there's fucking negative messages in pop shit. But so we said it for years, and then we were writing a sketch in the first season of Chappelle Show, that Real World sketch, and we were like, you know, it'd be funny as Charlie Murphy because he was just like such a like a. And so he did the sketch, and then he did a couple more sketches, and then one day at lunch he was like. He did the Player Haters Ball, and then one day at lunch, he was, like, telling a story. He was like, "I'd kick Rick James' ass a bunch of times." And I was like, "What's that now?" And I literally just was like, "Okay, let's stand up." And I was like, "Go repeat to Dave what you just told me." And he was like, "Yeah, man." So then Rick did, and then he just told the stories, and Dave looks at me, and I just, like, winked at him, like, "Yep." And he's like, "All right, we have to reenact this." I was like, "Yes, we do." And then we did, but it wasn't like... It was, yeah, and then again, it was like one of those things where it's like just trying to make the sketches. I remember I did a cut of them, because we'd like shoot the sketches and then I would just have to go to editing for days at a time. Like literally stay up for 48 hours, stay up for 70, like just crazy amounts of time of not sleeping to get sketches ready for like the live part. And with the Rick James sketches, I couldn't get to them. I had to cut like the racial draft and the nigger family and a bunch of like shit that was going to be on an earlier episode. So I did a cut of Rick James that wasn't. It was actually the first thing I ever directed, and I did a cut of it and brought it to the rap to the live part, and we showed it, and it did like okay, just because it wasn't honed at all. But the thing that kept getting laughs was cocaine's a hell of a drug. And I was like, okay, we need to put more cocaine's a hell of a drugs in. And then we just recut it for when it aired. I was so tired, and me and Dave were so sick of each other that because you're just in a bunker for, you know what I mean? Like, I love when people tell me, they'll come up to me and be like, "You know Dave's a genius, right?" And I'll be like, "Tell me more about this person that I talk to on the phone every day for 10 years and spent fucking years in a room with. Tell me, please, tell me, what else do you think?" We were so sick of each other. I did a cut of Rick James, and Chappelle reminded me of this recently. And he was like, you couldn't cut it all the way down. You couldn't get like a final cut. And I looked at him, I go, sorry, man. Just like, fuck you. Like, this is so goddamn hard. Like, you know how, like, I'm literally working as hard as I can. And he was too. Like, it's not like he was, you know, living high on the hog. Like, it's just, it was a hard, we'd have to shoot and then we'd have to write it all mostly ourselves. We took outside ideas, like, from writers and then we'd write them. But like, we took pitches. But it was, you know, we wrote everything ourselves, which is hard. It's really hard. But it gives the sketches like a consistency, I think, that most shows are like a little more schizophrenic. So yeah, man.
Damn, man, 48 hours?
Oh, yeah, I'd stay up for, yeah. And the worst part was that my friend Bijan, the editor, would have to stay up too. And I would be, and he was like hungry to do it. So all the other editors hated him because they were like, he was like 20, he was probably like 26 and was like happy to be, and it like not grown up on a half bake, was like, I can't believe I'm right. I'm editing with these guys. And so he was excited to be there. But you can only be so excited. Like, you'd be excited for like 20 hours.
To that exhaustion. But he
would just, yeah, he would fucking soldier on. It was awesome. It was like amazing. Because I didn't have to operate the machine. Like, I could just go like, no, do that. The best was, like, one of the last episodes where I was cutting in one room and Dave was cutting in another room. And I went in and both him and Bijan were asleep. And I was like, oh, my little babies.
Little Taliban sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because, yeah, it was just so fucking hard. But, yeah, it was worth it, man.
Hell yeah.
But it makes me, like, very skittish about doing another show. That's what I mean about, like, knowing, you know, I have to like the person and really, like, believe in them. Not believe in them, like, just like, yeah, you'll make it. Because I know a lot of people that'll make it. But it's like, do I believe in, it's like being a campaign manager, being like a secretary of state. You know, it's like you have to really give a fuck about that person's agenda or think that they're really gifted in a way that's impressive. Because you're going to be staying up to support this person. And it's going to be your sort of life force. And if it's, you know, I'm not interested in just writing for, like, Tim Allen's got a sitcom. You know what I mean? And I got nothing against Tim. It's just like, I don't fucking, like, I'm just not going to waste my time trying to make a guy with $50 million continue to do what he's been doing. But if it's someone, like, hungry and young and talented that deserved it. That was the thing, is I always felt like Dave deserved to be, you know, famous and, you know, like, respected. Like, the kind of respect he ended up getting. I always felt like he should. I always respected him that way. So I felt like everybody should. It just seemed like this is so fucking unfair. It's like Dave once said, I'm obsessed with justice. Like, I'm like, no, that's fucking, it's wrong. So if I, like, that's the, so it's, like, writing for people that I like I said, like Seth or Chris or Dave. It's like, because I fuck with them.
That's what you call the champs. Because yeah. Everybody on I guess, is a, deserves justice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That is correct, Felipe. I guess.
With champions.
For real, man, you got people on your, you get people on your podcast who don't even know what a podcast is.
Yeah, no, I know.
Do them, bro, do them.
Well, this is Corey Holcomb out this motherfucker. But you have a bunch of badass guests on your podcast.
Yeah, we get good people. I mean,
that guy from
Questlove.
No, that guest you have for Pootie Tang was a good guest.
Yeah, he was a badass guest.
They're all really interesting. Good, man. Like, that's the thing, is like, they're all people that.
What's your best episode? I know you got a top 10.
Well, my favorite, just in terms of like personal, was Robert Townsend. Just because he did Hollywood Shuffle, which is a movie I really love, and like,
yeah, it's a good movie.
He is just an interesting. He was really funny. He was like funnier than I thought he'd be, and it was really interesting because he was, yeah, he just had a lot of interesting stories. And like that time, there's a story on that podcast where him and Keenan Ivory Wayans were doing stand-up in, like, the late 70s, early 80s, and Keenan's agent came up to Robert. Robert didn't have an agent, and Keenan's agent came up. This is how fucking racist Showbiz was in 1980, as opposed to now, where it's everything's healed. an agent came up to Robert and said, "I'm looking. You'd be perfect because I'm looking for a wiry nigger." I swear to God, he said that.
That's just like
what?
Crazy, dog.
What did you say? So just like shit like that. That's like super interesting. But and he also like directed Raw, shit like that. But like the one we just did with Black Thought from the Roots was great too.
Robert Thompson, he was one of the Warriors, bro. In that movie, The Warriors, he was one of the
was
Furies.
He really? I didn't know that.
He was an extra. He had a Yankee uniform with makeup on.
I had no idea.
When I watched the movie again, then I went to Google it, and
you
then it was Robert Thompson uncredited as
really?
One of the,
that's dope.
One of the Furies.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's. I was gonna say, Scarface isn't that good a movie. I know this is hard for Latinos to hear.
No, it's all right. It's not the top 10.
Okay, never, no, but like,
we like
you
Goodfellas.
Know,
people live
okay,
by
good.
That shit.
No, I know that's the problem.
Every
like,
drug dealer,
dumb
you bust.
People think it's good. It's like, oh, it's not good. Let's be clear. It's a dumb cartoon.
It's a masterpiece. That no,
it's a masterpiece, man.
That's what I'm saying.
There's a lot of people. And
hey, I love Blood In, Blood Out.
Yeah, like there. That, well, that's the thing. It's like the amount of like Latino movies. There's just a short. There's a short list.
I remember we spent all day watching Scarface with my dad and my uncle.
We're they did. Kids. They did the DVD voiceover.
They did,
just like,
they did everything. It was on VHS, and I was standing on the side translating for everybody.
Rewind it, dog.
Yeah. So yeah, that would be the people. Questlove, Chris Rock.
And that story he has about Questlove has about the Biggie story about when he was kind of
oh yeah
on him,
when
and he, then
was he gonna,
died and he was going to give him that retort.
Yeah,
so that was badass.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of cool
shit. I never even.
Yeah. But and what's funny is Alan Hughes has the sound is fucked up, but that episode's really good because
yeah.
he like fought Tupac a bunch of times.
And that
like,
was cool that he cleared that up.
Yeah. He like straight up fought him, like they were friends. When people like, you know, glorify Tupac, I'm kind of like, eh, like let's take it easy because he wasn't like I used to see him at the Comedy Store.
You hear that, Chepo Juan Garcia?
Yeah, he was. Tupac wanted to fight Chappelle. He wanted to fight
really?
Rock. Yeah, he's a fucking asshole.
Fuck.
Yeah, Rock was gonna fight him.
Really?
Straight up.
Was it like just
at the MTV Awards? No, yeah, at the MTV Awards when Rock did the joke where he's like, "Suge Knight's here, Suge, don't shoot me," and Tupac like came up at like rolled up on him, and Chris was like, "All right, let's go," and
damn.
Tupac kind of backed up, but yeah, like the sort of glorifying these people is a bit like meh. When you've seen them, you know, it's a little bit, but that's yeah. So yeah, that I love the podcast because. You don't, it's just stories you don't get to hear, and it feels like a lot of white podcasts are just the same people over and over again. So that's our angle. But again, feels
it's a good angle.
Feels racist.
Reverse racism.
Yeah.
If there's such a thing. So now what you working on, fool?
I'm doing a pilot for Amazon, that I'm writing right now, and, where I play a parole officer, which I think will be fun because it's just kind of like my life in comedy in a weird way.
Get over here.
Where it's like, not like, well, it's like people, not like people look up to me, but there are younger people that like come to me for advice. And I just got to be like, no, what the fuck are you doing? Like, so I figured a good way to do that. And it's also interesting, like the incarceration system in America is fucked.
Hell yeah.
And so it's like an interesting like area. Like the amount of people on probation, it's like fucking, we have more prisoners than Russia, China, like any country on earth by like 50%. 2.5 million people. And just right now locked up. And they get out and they can't vote, they can't get jobs. And as parole officer, you got to drive them places. Like you're basically like their babysitter. So to me, it's a good. Set up for jokes, and it's but it'll be realistic at the same time. It won't be like goofy Reno 911 type shit.
I remember in the neighborhood, like the parole officer, they would have to test the guys in the neighborhood because they know they're all drug addicts, and these guys would be drinking cranberry juice or whatever kind of make sure
yeah.
they don't make up to test clean or show up with their wife's piss. Or
yeah.
they'll run from them. After a while, you don't report, but he still shows up looking for you. I remember, hey, man, there goes Lane. Here comes Lane. Everybody goes, here comes Lane. And everybody will run, you know, but damn.
Yeah, that's like in the pilot, like someone's running from
me. When we were doing a comedy show at the Sapphire in Alhambra, there was a big, ugly thug watching the whole show. He was watching the show. And then afterwards, when everybody was drinking at the bar, there was this older Latino man. And they were both mad-dogging each other. I know you, Holmes. And the guy goes, I know you too. And then they both start laughing. And he goes, ah, you are my probation officer in YA.
Yeah.
Look how he ended up.
He goes, what happened to you? Oh, I did prison time. I got a parole officer. I graduated.
Yeah, like that's 68 or 70% of them go back.
It's sad,
which is
huh?
Like, I mean, I'm not of the mind that, like, there is a certain subset of people that want to do crime. I don't think anyone wants to do crime. I think it's most of the time it's their only choice. Yeah, and then one of the reasons they do crime is because they don't have any fucking other way to make money when they get out of jail. Because you can't, if you have a felony on your resume, you might as well rip it up. You know what I mean? Like, ain't nobody hiring you.
Yeah, you don't have one and hope they don't find out.
Yeah, yeah, if they do a background, I mean, it's like, so it's like, how the fuck are you going to make money?
I came out of prison, nobody wants to buy my clocks no more.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. So I'm doing that, and I got a pilot with the Lonely Island that we did, and we're gonna send that out and see if anybody wants to pick it up for series. And doing some.
So Amazon's doing original shows, Netflix and Crackle.
Yeah, they got they did that show Transparent, and it won a bunch of awards and shit. So, and it's a really good show. So Woody Allen's doing a series for Amazon. So. So, yeah, and the other thing is they offered me more money than any other network. So I was like, okay. Like, they stepped up. So I was like, bet. Let's do it. Because I'd rather be on a small... I don't have, like, a face for NBC. You know what I mean? Like, I'm more of a niche. I'm more of a niche guy. So, yeah. So that's sort of... I'm happy to do something small. But how about you, man? What you doing?
I'm working a new 1-hour special.
I'm doing that too. Yeah,
I'm gonna do it. I don't know where I'm gonna film it at. I think I'm ready. Hopefully, Netflix or somebody.
Are you on Netflix now?
No. Oh yeah, my special is on Netflix now.
Great.
I think that's what really helped get more people to my shows.
Yeah, Netflix.
Is your special on Netflix too? Right?
No, it's not. It's on Comedy Central. Yeah.
Let people know.
I know. I mean, it's on Comedy Central. You can buy it. ccdirect.com direct.cc.com but yeah, like that's the I want to be on fucking Netflix because it's just people can see it, whereas the Comedy Central ones are kind of buried a little bit.
How many people walk up to you, man, and they come up to you and go, man, I got this project?
Oh, all the time.
Get Rodrigo. Tell him, bro.
Inundated with shit, I bet.
Huh? Oh, no, it's the worst.
I got this project.
Yeah, people fucking send me shit.
I'm trying to get it off the air here. Yeah. All it needs is your name on it. Yeah. The show
right now. No, people send me shit on Facebook. I'm like,
shut up,
dude. Constant fucking. You got to read this. I think you'll like it. What else do you think I'll like? Tell me more about what you think I'll like. Because what do I like now? I bet you couldn't tell me what I like now. I think you like it. I think you'll like it mostly because if you like it, I'll be successful.
I was with a comedian, and he saw Seth Rogen with his lady.
Oh, who were they in Chicago?
Oh, yeah, remember him? And then he opened his computer, and he put his script on his flash drive real quick, and he handed it to him right there. When you get a chance, Playboy.
Call him Playboy?
No. But it felt like it.
Yeah, but Seth can't take that shit because he can get sued. Like, you can't. I can't look at this shit.
No, you can't.
No.
You can't give it. Walk up to somebody and give it to them.
No, because if you ever do anything in that area, we got sued for Half Baked.
Oh, so.
Are you serious?
So yeah. Once you look at it, then you do something similar to they come at you?
Yeah.
These swindlers.
Yeah. Then if you do something, if that kid's movie was about a college fraternity, and then he does Neighbors, it's like, he stole my idea. It's just how people are.
So people just hand you script just to make money later.
Yeah. Yeah,
motherfuckers.
Basically. Litigious society. That's how it goes.
So you're going to be at Next so people can watch you live.
The next, I mean, I'm in LA pretty much every night. The next road thing I'm doing is in Arlington, Virginia at the Draft House on March, late March, like 21st and 22nd or something. So if you're in Arlington, so yeah.
What's up, fool? I'll be at the Comedy Catch in Chattanooga, February 26th through March 1st. Irvine Improv, March 5th through the 8th. Houston Improv, March 12th through the 15th. Pittsburgh Improv, March 26th through the 29th. What's up, Rodrigo?
Chilling. I got one quick question for you, Neil.
Yeah.
How'd you guys get Stephen Wright in Half Baked? You guys knew him?
I asked him. I mean, David Dunn had hosted later before Carson Daly hosted it. And Stephen Wright was a guest, and we were like, you know, we got to get Stephen Wright. The motherfucker's hilarious. And he was great. He's fucking so funny. And that's a funny idea, too.
The guy on the couch? Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's just a funny idea.
Stephen Wright story. Felipe has a Stephen Wright story.
Hit it, man.
It's funny, man. When I was working at Dodger Stadium, I was an open micer.
I'm listening.
And I was cooking fries, chicken, ham, no, just fries and chicken.
Grilling.
And I was grilling. I was a grill man, me and Ivan Cuellar. And I saw Stephen Wright, and I said, man, nobody walking up to this motherfucker. They don't know who the fuck he is. You know, I was getting mad because nobody walked up to him. So I came out of the kitchen, and I walked up to him and said, Stephen Wright, what's up, man? You're my favorite comedian. I remember watching you on the Young Comedian Show. And he stuck out his hand. I stuck my hand out to shake it, and he put his hand inside his hoodie, and he shook my hand because he didn't want to touch my germs.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, no, he was really funny. And the great thing is I saw him 2 years ago and he had no recollection of me.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Boston's finest.
Yeah. But I don't give a shit. He's
half baked, bro.
Yeah, he smokes a lot of weed. All right, well, nice to see you.
What's up, fool? Thank you, Neil Brennan, for being on the show,
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, what's up, fool?